are listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to State of the Art with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.
Are you ever?
And
you
what a show
are.
We what a show we have today, Paul.
It's a magical day.
It is,
Michael.
A magical day.
I'm all a tither. I'm sitting here beside myself. How did I
so
manage?
That makes two
and look
of
at that,
you,
I just broke my own rule. I'm so stringent with the guests come in. Don't
yes,
hit the table.
Yes.
Don't hit the table.
You
what did I just do? I gesticulated here in front of everybody.
And
I'm
you
so
be
embarrassed.
Careful how you say that. What you talking about?
I'm very embarrassed.
Listen,
I apologize.
I'm thrilled to be here. It's finally we're getting some sunshine and it's a beautiful day and our guests are enjoying this lovely view from the studio.
Why do the guests get a better view than we do?
I'm not.
Why
sure.
do I Maybe just get your mug and they get trees? Why is that?
I didn't think our view was so.
Not that.
Bad.
Well. I mean, your view is certainly worse than my view. I mean, it's much more pleasant to look at you than
well,
you look at me.
Well, thank you.
But
no
offense, I'd still rather have a tree. I'd rather.
Yes. We try to, you know, treat our guests to. To something.
To here. Something, yes.
Right? They've
yes.
done come into the studio, gone all this trouble to be with us today.
And so, the and beautiful new go. Marijuana plant we have in the office.
Well, you know, we shouldn't really have mentioned that.
We should.
Should we have?
No, we don't. But
it's actually
nice.
A money tree.
Paul. Is that what it is?
That's what they told me.
Is that
me.
What you called it?
That's what, that's what they're calling it now.
A different story. Okay.
We'd like to thank, ladies and gentlemen, our sponsor, Breakdown Services, the entertainment industry standard used around the world for providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. And to learn more about Breakdown Services, just simply visit them at BreakdownExpress.com.
We'd also like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com, one of the Internet's most prominent listing sources for the live arts in Southern California. We're grateful to Performing Arts Live for lending their support to our live arts calendar.
Our two in-studio guests that have joined us today have brought a message as well. Currently, they are working on the documentary Whitewashed Adobe, The Rise of Los Angeles, a history series for public television about the remarkable and explosive growth of Los Angeles from 1850 to 1950 and the multi-ethnic people who built this city into a world-famous metropolis. But this is just their latest endeavor. Today, they'll be discussing their just-completed documentary, Weaving the Past, A Journey of Discovery. Please welcome Walter Dominguez and Shelley Morrison.
Welcome, Shelley.
Hello.
How are you?
Hi there.
How are you? Welcome to State of the Arts.
Thank you so much for joining us. We're happy to have you.
Thank you
Hi,
for having
how are you
us.
How you doing? Your view is gorgeous, although looking at the two of you is not bad either.
Oh, Shelley, you need to get out more.
Thank
I'm
you,
telling
Shelley.
You.
Thank you. That's very sweet of you. And actually, these are new studios for us. We just moved here, or
That's
LA Talk
true.
Radio, rather, just moved. And I tell you, Michael, I'm digging it.
I know. It's fun.
It's a lot better than nice. It was before. That other place, nice, but little shaky at times.
Yeah, well, the elevator.
The elevator with the old chalk.
You never could quite depend on that elevator. Was it going to work
yeah.
that day or
Have
not?
Have you been in your elevator?
I know, right?
Yeah.
It's a little strange.
So to give that slow. Is a vast improvement, which will give you an idea how bad the last one was.
Oh, my God, and it talks to you.
I know, right? What's that all about?
I don't know. In a few minutes, we'll chat via telephone with our mystery guest. I don't have mystery music, Michael. I
don't. You
I
don't?
I got to get some mystery music. I suppose I could do our mystery guest. There we go. With the Emmy Award-winning Caroline to her credit, as well as her iconic role in Remington Steele, as well as dozens of live theater, film, and television credits, you'll be able to see her locally in one of Southern California's most acclaimed and prestigious venues. Our mystery caller and a great friend of our show will join us in just a few moments. But first, Michael, how was your week?
It was good, Paul.
Yeah?
I was out there seeing theater and supporting it this weekend over at the Colony Theater in Burbank. The
yes.
gorgeous theater. I'm sure you both have been there, Walter, Shelley. And the opening of Falling for Make-Believe, the,
yes.
the
who
Barbara drama yeah. about Lorenz Hart.
Yeah. Who Barbara Beckley told us about.
Barbara she Beckley here, last yes. week, yes. And such a fascinating story because the content was so much that people don't know about him that was never really discussed back in the days of his being on Broadway as a tunesmith. And I must say that it was a valiant effort with an amazing cast of people, I might add, and a lovely book. I think overall, I think it's one of those projects that has gotten up on its feet and it's standing up nice and tall. It still needs a little more work, I think. A second act, in my opinion, is necessary for this show. But other
that's
than
a
that...
I tell you, if that's the critique you have, that the show wasn't long enough and you wanted more,
yes,
that's a pretty good that's a pretty good critique.
I mean, really stunning performances. And, you know, just the story alone about somebody who had such a tormented life as a songwriter and was such lived in such a dark place because he was denied, you know, being able to be really who he was. So
yeah,
he wrote about it through lyrics and melodies with Richard Rodgers.
Yeah.
Fascinating. And the young man that portrays him was did a beautiful job. And he wasn't really a singer of musical theater. The others in the cast were. And Brett Ryback, who played Richard Rodgers, always a great actor, turning in a great performance. And Rebecca Johnson, really another musical theater star here in Los Angeles, just a gorgeous performance from her. And Tyler Milliron, who is a young man, up-and-comer, gorgeous voice. And so it's all there, the makings for a very successful show. And it's already being talking about extending that.
Really?
So, I mean, it hasn't, you know, officially been announced, but they're starting to add performances. So.
Oh, that's great.
I wish them the best of luck on the road to New York, which
and
is where
something.
The show belongs.
Adding performances at that place, it's
yeah,
a good-sized venue, one of our good mid-sized venues in town. So if they're adding, then it means they're selling well.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Good. And good for them, because they always do good work over there.
Right.
But I think we should probably get to our friend that's...
well, you don't want to know about my week?
Oh, yes, yeah, of course.
Okay, I went to Panda Express. Okay.
Okay. The highlight of your week, Paul.
That's it. No, I tell you, I did go to Panda Express. That's it. I didn't do much else.
Yeah. Are you serious?
I did notice one thing about
What's
Panda
that?
Express. It doesn't really matter what meat you order. whatever you put on the rice and the chow mein tastes exactly the same.
Right.
It's like it's just different decoupaged
yeah,
protein. It all has that orange glaze. Anyway.
Yeah. Now, you know what I will say, though?
What's
that? I did try that place over there across at the Sherman Oaks Fashion Square Mall. That
right,
place you suggested, I tried yesterday.
Oh, the
it was fantastic.
Stone Canyon Kitchen.
Stone Canyon
yes,
Kitchen.
They love
yeah,
me there. They love me there. And that's right next to the Panda Express, and I won't make that mistake again.
All right.
Anyway, give our mystery guest his way to so patiently.
I'm so excited that our mystery guest is with us. It's a heartwarming true story that follows a group of friends who gather each week at a salon in, how am I going to say this, Chinkapin? Is that how you say it, Paul?
What's up? I don't know. That's why you're reading this intro, Michael.
Thank
That's
you
why
so
I
much.
Threw it to you.
I'm going to say at a salon in somewhere in Louisiana.
Chinquapin, but I imagine when we talk to our guests, she'll figure it out for us. Yes.
And Trudy.
No, it's Truvy, actually.
Truvy.
Yes,
oh,
believe
well,
it or not.
There you go, man.
Are you learning more and more why you got this intro?
I certainly
yes,
am. You devil, you. Dispenses shampoo and advice to Weezer, the town curmudgeon, Miss Clary, an eccentric millionaire with a sweet tooth, and Malin, whose daughter Shelby is about to get married. Tough as steel and fragile as the blossoms of magnolia trees, these hilarious characters gossip, tease, laugh, fight, cajole, and comfort each other as they go through life's big joys and challenges. At the hub of this wheel is our first guest. She's really a very special lady. She is a great friend of the State of the Arts. Please welcome, ladies and gentlemen, Stephanie Zimbalist.
Stephanie!
Hello, how are you?
Oh, how are you? Okay, the first thing you got to do is help us with our pronunciations. How much
yes,
did Michael get right?
What was my score, Stephanie?
And a huge new sign on the riverbank that says, I heart Chinkapin. Chinkapin.
Okay.
There you go. Chinkapin, I like the way you say it, too. So
Natchitoches is the name of the town where they filmed the movie.
Okay.
Natchitoches, which is a very strange, it's a very bizarre spelling, but it's pronounced Natchitoches. Yeah, it's in northern Louisiana.
Northern Louisiana.
Wow.
Stephanie, it's great to have you back on the show.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
We had you on when you were doing Tea at Five, which just got rave reviews, and we were happy to help you talk about that, but we're interested in talking about this. I was looking at your promotional material. You've done Steel Magnolias before, is that correct?
Yes, I did it up at the Rubicon with Von Ray Wood, who's reprising her Clary, her magnificent Clary. We did it there with Jenny Sullivan directing in 2011.
Well, speaking of Jenny Sullivan, we actually have some friends of Jenny Sullivan as our guests here today. I don't know if you heard the intro, but you've all worked together, it seems. It's a very small world here at State of the Arts. Is that correct?
Jenny is a marvelous director and a friend. And
hi, Stephanie. Yep.
Stephanie
it's
is also a friend.
No, hi, sweetheart.
Who's that there?
Walter.
Shelley Morrison.
And Walter Dominguez.
Oh, for heaven's sake. Yeah. Yes.
This is your life,
Stephanie. All Jenny has talked about today. That's fantastic.
Oh, bless her, sweetheart. How are you guys doing?
We're doing well. We're open now, so we're pumping with gas, and I've got all my my shoes and my boobs and my hairspray are all clicking together, so everything's working. I just had to get them all timed right, and everything's timed right, so I'm a happy girl.
What's that line from?
The funniest thing about this is that everybody that knows me knows I have, you know, really two right left hands when it comes to hairdressing. I have no talent for hairdressing, and I have to get up there in front of I don't know how many hundreds of people every night and pretend I'm an expert at hairdressing. So, 'cause I have to do it on stage in two different hairdos. So, but I pulled it off. I can walk and talk. It's sort of like patting your head and rubbing your tummy and speaking Hungarian all at once.
Wow. You never cease to amaze and delivers. So I can only imagine it's
did you have
a
sort
great
of,
production.
Did you have sort of a stunt hairdresser who helped you through that process, like gave you some tricks of the trade? Or
there's a charming guy here from, he's from Georgia, actually, so his accent helped a bit, too, but... he's a wonderful hairdresser, and he designed a hairdo that I can do it. So that's good.
You know what I'm curious about? What do you do on stage? Are they just, because obviously you can't blast people with real hairspray over and over again. What is it? Is it just like a water vapor, or how does that work?
No, on our stages, and you know, any Jenny Sullivan stage, everything is real. So
Wow. We
have real sinks with real water and real hairspray and real pins that fall on the ground, real teasing combs and real chairs that swirl around and have, you know, feet on them that get in the way and we trip over in the dark and all that stuff. So it's all
much
it's
like
always
a
real salon. You could come into the set and get your hair done.
I was just going to say, just walk in there and just get it done on stage before the show.
Speaking of the show,
we have to throw this out there before we forget, and we will definitely give this information out again before the end of the hour. This is Steel Magnolias, and it runs through Sunday, May 26th, of course, at Laguna Playhouse, and that's 606 Laguna Canyon Road in Laguna Beach. Tickets can be purchased online at lagunaplayhouse.com. That's lagunaplayhouse.com. Or you can call 949-497-ARTS. That's 949-497-2787. And go to the box office, go to the website, because you can find out about all sorts of good things like student discounts and group discounts and all that stuff. So want to throw that out
so there. So nice to have a gig that's right there next to the ocean, right, Stephanie?
It's fantastic, yeah. It's really my dear friend Terry Ralston, who this is our third time together working, is playing Weezer in this, and she was very close friends with Bonnie Franklin, who played it up at the Rubicon, which was Bonnie's last full production performance that she did, I believe. I think Bonnie did something else in New York after she did Steel Magnolias. She did something. But they were good friends, so Jenny has sort of dedicated the production to Bonnie. It's very sweet.
And lovely.
Yeah, it's a wonderful cast. Allison Lindsay is playing Shelby, and Von Ray Wood, as I said, is playing Clary, and Malin is played by Elise Mirto, who's wonderful, which is the role that I played, and Joanna Strapp is a fantastic Anel, and we just have a great cast. It's really
terrific. It sounds it, definitely.
And the audiences are loving it, right?
They do. They really love it.
Yeah, it's
a real crowd pleaser. It definitely is.
Absolutely. Where does this rank for you, though, Stephanie? Because you're such a wonderful actress in all mediums, but for the theater and that, you know, everything you've done in the theater, where does this fit into the scheme of things as far as your favorites?
Oh, well, it's a loud performance, you know. It's a tricky performance because it's very easy. You don't want to go OTT on this one, you know. You don't want to go into caricature.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a friend from Alabama, and when she came to see it in 2011, she said, "Oh, Stephanie, thank you for not making a dreadful southern, you know, crappy accent that people do that's bad, first of all, and puts down southerners, second of all." So, you know, you have to
toe
the line. And we have, you know, I'm sitting in the office of the artistic director, and our dramaturg is sitting at the next table, and she very kindly led us to a website with the real people talking from Natchitoches and that area so that we can really hear the accent and hear the specific vowel sounds.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, Stephanie. I just want to say, speaking of real people, I had no idea it was a true story. I didn't know that Steel Magnolias was a true story.
Yeah, that's why it's so good. That's like Sidemen, you know, it's because it's basic. My dog.
Was going to ask you if he was there.
That's okay, just another hint of the Southern.
That's my my little long-haired dachshund is barking, and she's guarding the room for me.
Is that the one that I met when you did tea at 5 up here at the Falcon?
Yes.
Sweet. Stephanie, thank you so much. We got two guests here in studio, and we're going to sort of throw the mics to them, but we're so grateful to have you on the air. Once again, it is Steel Magnolias at Laguna Playhouse. That's 606 Laguna Canyon Road in Laguna Beach. Runs through May 26th. Go online, lagunaplayhouse.com, or you can call 949-497-ARTS. So great to have you
with us,
Stephanie.
Make a weekend out of it.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you, Paul. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you, Stephanie.
We'll chat again soon.
All right.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
She's such a doll.
She is. She's lovely,
great,
lovely, classy, classy lady.
She is. She is. Good to talk to her, and a good show. And, you know, the prices, too. They put that in the promotional material. They're very reasonable.
You know, I think everybody's trying to make it possible for people to go to the theater. We just need to get them up off their backsides to do it.
Yeah, exactly. New York people come here and they look at these prices and they're like, oh my God, this is unbelievable. Two people could go out for less than one person can in New York.
Exactly, and because the movies are expensive. I mean, that's where I have a problem.
Yeah. Our present day world seems to move at speed of light. With each passing day, it becomes more and more difficult to connect with the past of only two or three generations ago. And yet the memory and influence of those who came before us lingers, demonstrating both the powerful example of their struggle and how important it is that we better understand and preserve their memory. Well, our guests today are recognizing that importance with the documentary Weaving the Past, A Journey of Discovery. Please welcome filmmaker Walter Dominguez and his wife, actress and producer, Shelley Morrison.
Hello again.
Hi there.
Walter, did I get that right?
Yes.
Dominguez. Dominguez.
Yes.
Okay,
like
good.
Dominguez Hills, which is well-known here in Southern California.
Yeah, for sure
it is. Good. I'm always a little dodgy with that. And not after your mess up. You know why I threw Michael that intro, because I just wouldn't have been able to make it.
When I write the show, I do the same thing. I throw him all the difficult stuff to say.
Yeah, we put together our little cheat sheet scripts here, and whenever it's complicated, we give the other person the thing to say.
I think Nakadich is a little harder
than Dominguez.
Oh, Nakadich, I knew someone who was born there, Bobby Biles.
Oh, the actual place?
Nakadich.
Oh, really?
Nakadich, Louisiana. Hmm. And Bobby used to live on Melrose next to the Horseshoe Playhouse, and we were all in a play there together. And you'd go up to Bobby, he lived above the theater, and on one wall he would have photographs of all the people he liked, and on the other wall he had pictures of all the people he didn't like. And then in his bathroom over the toilet, there was this huge moose head. Bless dear sweet Bobby Biles, I miss
him. That's kind of cool though, to have have a blacklist and a good list sort of represented visually in your office.
But it was like people he didn't like. He didn't hate anybody.
Right.
And we were all in a production of Only in America with Herschel Bernardi.
Wow. Oh, wow.
That's years ago.
Herschel Bernardi, the Fiddler on the Roof.
That's
Herschel
right.
Bernardi.
Yeah,
yes.
I played his wife. And Herschel was on a Metrical diet. I don't know if people would know what Metrical is, like slim fast.
Okay.
And he wanted to lose some weight. And we always had this one scene in his office where I'm sitting behind him and he's in front of me in a armchair that used to squeak. And this Metrical gave him a lot of gas. So what he would do is that he would wait and he would time it with the squeaking of his chair to cut a few, and I would get it. So the next night I went to the theater and I oiled the chair.
Brilliant.
Oh, the look on his face, the poor man.
Brilliant.
He couldn't synchronize it with a chair, so he turned he didn't talk to me for a long time.
So she's a little prankster, is she?
I'm going to remember that one. You know, whenever I have a Fiber One bar, that's a good thing to remember. Fiber One bars will kill you, but that's another story.
Really?
Let's talk about
carry around a little dog.
Yeah.
If happens, exactly. You just
there
think,
you go.
Bad dog.
Always blame the dog. Blame the dog. So, Walter, let me ask you something when we get into this thing about your documentary. I'm always curious about when people do films or documentaries around about family members, and that is their introduction to the person is because they are on the family. What is it about this particular story of a family member of yours that you think will resonate most with viewers? Like, what's the thing that people will most embrace about this tale?
I think one of the things they're going to embrace are the characters, the faces, the people that I meet along the way on the journey I take to learn more deeply about my grandfather's life. I interview people. I go to the elders in the family, and some of these elders are full of wisdom, humor, and they're just delightful. And I think people are always enchanted when we've had some preview audiences, mm-hmm. and people come away thinking about these people that they met in, through the film, and laughing and crying and just wondering about them. And they reminds me of my auntie or my grandmother.
Seeing someone they know. Yeah.
And like, you know, we don't have people like that anymore. I mean, there's just so few left of that era, that generation of people who were just so charming and wonderful. So
and respectful of one another.
Respectful.
Well, because they're connecting. And young people who are seeing the film want to talk about it all night. Mm-hmm. And there's history, there's stories. And they say to us, you know, how come they don't teach us this in school? Because there's a whole part of the Mexican Revolution. So we're very...
A whole part of the Mexican Revolution that isn't addressed in the...
In schools.
History. And so much of it actually took place
here. So you're saying
that
American history books have left out certain elements of foreign cultures? What are the odds of that happening? Do you think that's happening?
But Ben, listen, this is the way it is. I mean, this is what they're doing. They're leaving out a lot of stuff, and so a lot of kids are very confused. Wow. And so we're living in a world, you know, where technology is galloping ahead, but people aren't connecting one to another. And this film, what Walter has done in this film, is he's encouraging people to explore their family,
their own
sit
history.
Down with the elders, sit down, record them before it's too late.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, that, you know, that, and I agree with what you're saying. That has to come from, you know, the mother and father of any family. That direction, you know, has got to be given to the children. Otherwise, not unlike, you know, what I say often on this show. And you just said it about technology, and I just said I was across the street at the restaurant that you were recommending yesterday, which had wonderful food, but actually everybody sitting in that area was sitting with somebody else. Yeah. They weren't speaking to each other. They were both on their respective phones.
Right.
Not a word was said during a whole 30 minutes of them dining to each other. That to me is bizarre, strange, and quite...
And it's doubly
concerning.
It's also doubly toxic because it's not only the lack of social interaction that you have with people, but you're talking about what you're talking about with this film is not only research, but pulling in information about history and all this. And we're so bombarded with garbage information. We're so bombarded with
unnecessary
dreck,
information,
whether it's reality television dreck or internet or the pipeline of sewage that the internet can be. I certainly find value in the internet, but I also recognize it as the world's largest bathroom wall is the other thing that it is. So you know, you have to pick and choose and pull the good from that. But that's the other thing too. Not only the lack of conversation, but the lack of
communication.
Communication, exactly.
Something meaningful.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Something meaningful.
Should I be slamming this so much on an internet radio show?
Oh,
is that wrong?
No.
I think what the point
is
what they have done, what Shelley and Walter have done here, is they've brought it back, and it needs to be seen, and it needs to be understood. And you said that these young people talk about it when they're seeing this in the previews, right?
The film really appeals to people of all ages. That's one of the things that we're very excited about. And people of all ethnic backgrounds. This is a film that has to do specifically with a Mexican-American and Mexican family, but it really is universal. You could be talking about people of any ethnic background.
Right.
And but the film has something to say about life, and I think that is what's missing in so much of the flood of information we have, the sense of connection to what's essential in life.
The family
is one in very important part of it.
People are so tired of coming out of a theater after having seen a film and come out humming the car crashes.
Yeah.
this is a story. It's also history. It's also an incredible journey that my husband took. It took 12 years to complete this
film.
Wow. We put our own money into it because we wanted to
take that time, to have the time to do it, and not have to worry about investors who are anxious about when is it going to be done. This is a film that had to have its own pace. But mind you, I was trying to dig up information and find things out that happened over 100 years ago and try to find descendants and people that might have some memory of people that were older than them. And so it was not an easy thing to do. But nevertheless, doors opened and amazing things happened. And I did find a lot of information and came across people I had no idea existed, including family. And it was an extraordinary
experience. What a fascinating
experience.
It sounds to me like you have the makings of a book here as well,
yeah.
Given the amount of information I'm sure you've culled over 12 years.
It says it in the film. We're moving on to another project, please. Enough. But I do want to say right now that for all of you who are listening right now, on May 18th, which is a Saturday night, Walter and I are hosting a private screening of Weaving the Past, A Journey of Discovery at the Linwood Dunn Theater, and this is a benefit for the Museum of Social Justice. Walter's the president of the board. I'm on the board. We're hosting this, but all tickets sold will go directly to the museum. And you can get tickets, museumofsocialjustice.org.
That's right.
And if you want to find out more about us, you can go to weavingthepast.com. And I think you would be very pleasantly pleased that this is a film for the whole family.
And yet it's not you know, a walk in the park. It's not. There is some very intense and very substantive history that, and some of it is difficult. But I think safely to say anybody over age 12 could see the film.
But difficult and informative versus difficult and gratuitous are two different things.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, exactly.
Yeah. Thank you.
And we will throw those websites out there a couple of times over the course of the show. But as a quick reminder, weavingthepast.com for the film and museumofsocialjustice.org for the upcoming benefit. And give us the date again, Shelby.
May 18th.
And I'm assuming that tickets are available on both of those.
Now, this would be a donation for the museum.
Gotcha.
So the tickets are kind of pricey. Right. But if you go to the Weaving the Past and connect with us when we have future screenings.
We have a Facebook page as well.
And people can
get information there as well.
And that's something that I always have to, and I thank you for mentioning that about the ticket price, but that's the thing that people have to remember. When you're doing a fundraiser for some place, you can't look at the price of the ticket. It's just like, well, I paid this and I get this. You're making a donation to a cause and you're getting to enjoy and a documentary as well.
Right.
I have a theater.
There'll be a reception.
There you go.
There's a reception with hors d'oeuvres. There are going to be celebrities doing the red carpet. It's going to be the whole nine yards. My husband of almost 40 years, Walter, has
Which
done this
looks
incredible
highly
film.
Impossible that you could be together for 40 years because
no,
you don't
does.
Look.
Oh, thank you.
Old
oh,
enough
oh,
for
thank
that.
You.
Oh, bless you.
We have a painting in the closet.
That's aging. Yeah.
Aging.
No, he's kept me young and I've aged him. God, what are you gonna do? But I'm just so proud of this film. I'm so proud of Walter and I'm so proud of the people that worked on this film. And just one little quick side note. 75% of the people that worked on this film we've known for over 25 years.
Wow.
So it's
the very definition of a collective labor of love.
Can I ask you a question just in the process of you making the film and the research that you had to do? Did you have to be very dedicated to a schedule? Did you put yourself, stick to it, and every day some amount of time was spent on this film, or did it happen when it happened?
That's a good question. How do you sustain enthusiasm for something over a 12-year process?
Well, obviously there were periods where, for example, my father got very ill and then died during the process of making the film, and that's actually part of the film. So there were periods where I couldn't really spend all that amount of time that I wanted, but I was always doing something researching archives, interviewing people, always in. But there were long, long periods of time, especially the last 5 years, where up at dawn and working until it's been a long process, but it's paid off. It's a very, I have to say this. I mean, I'm the filmmaker, so naturally I favor the film, but. But honestly, I've watched it probably 7,500 times for one reason or another, mm-hmm. checking things and all that and the flow. But it's a very entertaining film, and it goes by. It's 2 hours. It's a little over 2 hours, but it goes by quickly. And we deliberately made it so that it would be fast moving, entertaining, has a rich musical score to it, multi-layered, wonderful imagery, great characters, fascinating things that happen. So it's entertaining, but it says something, and you come away feeling like you've learned something.
Yeah, because a lot of the times you'll watch. I mean, I'm glad that you said that. You talked about sort of the aesthetic and the entertaining aspects of it, because there's so many people, they hear a documentary and they go, "Oh, history lesson." Mm-hmm. And I'm the documentary junkie of the ages. I love documentaries. So thank you for pointing that out, because I think that a lot of people don't embrace documentaries.
I must say that while Walter was saying what he just said so beautifully, if I had a camera and could have taken a photograph of Walter and Shelley's look at him while he was saying that, we would make a fortune.
Oh, thank you.
It was so beautiful. The impression on your wife's
face. I wish we had.
I am lucky. She is the best.
Yes, she
is. And
we
have a wonderful relationship, so I'm blessed.
It's family.
Well, it's nice of you to read up the cards that she's holding like that. That's really great.
And make it sound real.
I'm kidding, of course.
Good actor.
We have to take a tiny little sliver of a break in between, and then we'll come back to talking about this, but it's time to do our arts calendar, which I will do today, Michael, with your permission.
Please.
Beirut is the spiteful nickname given to a section of the Lower East Side of New York where citizens who've been infected with an unnamed disease are tattooed and quarantined. Torch has tested positive and imprisoned in a festering and seemingly hopeless basement room. His strong-willed and passionate-for-life girlfriend, Blue, a negative, sneaks past the quarantine barricades to be with him. What unfolds is a painful struggle to love and maintain strength individually and together when their personal values are in direct opposition to one another. Questions are raised about an individual's right to choose the manner in which they live and die, the role of the government in its citizens' health and sexuality, and the purpose of a guilty past in deciding how to shape one's future. This is Beirut, and it's playing through May 19th at the Lounge Theater on Santa Monica Boulevard. For tickets, call 530-957-0818. I didn't tell you, Michael, I saw this past weekend. Yes, because David Reynolds, who was in our production of A Christmas Twist, a wonderful actor named David Reynolds, mountain of a man, 6'5", just a big man. He plays, actually, there's only these two characters and a guard who comes by, and he's got a little scene there, and it's great. But it was really an astounding piece of theater. It was very, very powerful, very, very strong. Three actors on stage, no intermission, a lot of smoking, a lot of violence, a lot of nudity. And it just all three things that I go out for, but it was very, very powerful. It's obviously an AIDS parable, and but not remotely dated in its
I like that theater
presentation
too.
The Lounge,
yeah.
And this was in that smaller space, so that whole claustrophobic thing really worked for this. So highly recommended. If they're still there, I think they're still running. They may even be extending, but
nice.
Check it out. So anyway, just wanted to put that in our arts calendar.
Absolutely.
And back to this. Shelley, I wanted to ask you, being most of our listeners will probably know you from your acting work, most specifically from your role on Will and Grace, and this producing hat that you wore, first time you've done it, second time you've done it, 40th time you've done it, and do you enjoy it as much as performing?
Back in the early 60s, I was the youngest female legit producer in Los Angeles. I produced the West Coast premiere of Tennessee Williams' Sweet Bird of Youth.
Oh, wow.
And my roots are theater. I've produced all through the years, mainly acting, but now I love producing because I'm using a part of my brain that is wonderfully creative, and I don't have to pluck or shave.
To put it specifically.
Yes. You know what I mean. The whole upkeep.
Right. The whole
Cacca del Toro.
The Cacca del Toro. Oh, love that. Caca del Toro. Brilliant. You made me think of what I call Facebook. I call it Libro di Faccia.
Oh, I like that.
It's making it sound very classic.
I want that as a stage name.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome Libro di Faccia and her amazing dancing Toro. That's very funny. That's very
funny. No, it's perfect. It's just wonderful. I play bad cop a lot to his good cop, but that's
well,
okay.
You need that, though. You need that.
You have to
I'm
have
tough. Them. I'm from the Bronx. You know,
yeah,
as you is to have an objective
my family is from the Bronx, too. My mother is,
really?
Yes. My mother grew up on Mead Street in the Bronx, right by the Five Corners.
Mean?
Yeah, Mead.
Mean?
Mead.
Oh, no, no, no. She's moved to Mean Street now that she's gotten older. But she was born on Mead Street. And no, actually, she was born on Taylor Avenue. Then they moved to Mead Street.
I was on was Townsend Avenue just off 170th.
Okay. We were
Mount Eden.
Right across, right off Morris Park Avenue on Pelham.
Pelham. You know, Pelham
Park.
Give
right
Shelley and Walter a little a bit of your mother. She's
I just talked to Charlotte the other day, and she was very hip. Paul, we are so proud of you. We really are. My mother just—I could get up in the morning and I'm, oh, good job! Did you see how he did that? The way he sits up.
Well,
and
I
all
start
that.
Talking to you the way that you spoke when we first came from New York.
Oh, would you? The Judy Holliday thing. Tell it. The Gregory Peck story. Tell it.
Oh,
the Gregory Peck story.
Oh my God. Yeah. I don't know which one you have, but there were a few.
You know.
But I did.
Are there more than one Gregory Peck story?
Oh God, he was so gorgeous. Oh, classy. I was in a Western with him, and every fabulous character actor in the world was in that movie. Eli Wallach, Telly Savalas, you know, Edward G. Robinson, and I'm playing this Indian. Oy, oy, and I was doing the
what
flying
exactly
nun.
Is an Indian oy? Because I've never heard of
an Indian oy is an Indian today. Oh, oy. Okay. But I was doing the flying nun on stage 3 at Columbia. And then I would get out of the nun's outfit and I would run down to stage 9 and I'd get in the Indian outfit. It was very confusing. But I was under contract to Columbia and they would, you know, put you in anything and send you to everything. And so here I am looking like such a schlub. And Gregory Peck is gorgeous and he comes every morning and he says, good morning, Shelley. And every morning I would say, Jesus Christ, it's Gregory Peck. Oh, you just... sensational, classy man.
Loved your voice. Loved you. You said you sounded like Judy Holliday in those days.
When I first started at City College, yeah. In the theater arts department with my classmates were Robert Vaughn and James Coburn.
Wow.
But I used to talk like this, and I was always in these Shakespeare scenes, you know, with playing Desdemona. And the head of the department said, Matrani, which is my maiden name, get rid of the voice or get out of the department. And this wonderful voice teacher worked with me for 2 years at the school, Alice Parishon. She should rest in peace, God love her.
Placement.
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 Placement. So it gave me a good ear for dialects and everything. And so I've done a lot of voiceovers through the years.
Oh, yeah.
Voiceover work, which I love. Because, again, you don't have to wear makeup. You can go in your schmatas. It's true. I must think that I'm some kind of slob. I do clean up well.
No, and thank you. And I have to say, that's the loveliest house coat I've seen in a long time. Yeah. It's really beautiful.
How do you pick a finger?
You mentioned Robert Vaughn. He was a very, very, he is a very nice man. He moved to the town that I grew up in, Ridgefield, Connecticut. Mm-hmm. And he moved there when I was working in a restaurant there in high school. And he was like the only celebrity that Ridgefield, Connecticut had at that point, since a lot of people have moved there. Cyndi Lauper lived there. Harvey Fierstein lives there. Mm-hmm. And but he was all we had in 1982. And what a nice man. I waited on him a number of times and told him I wanted to be an actor, and it took so much time and talked to me. He was a really, really, really nice guy. I really enjoyed spending the time with him.
Are we talking about the same?
Difference
a little different
here.
For you. Maybe it was a little different for you.
My mother and father fed him.
Ah.
They would. My father would give him money. He would buy subscriptions to Time magazine when Vaughn was selling them. And we were at a gathering, and Vaughn was not nice to my parents.
Really?
Really.
Oh.
And it wasn't until I was on... Oh, I'm talking too much about this. Anyway, Robert, if you're out there, you're a terrific person. You're a good writer, and that's all I have
to
say.
No, but you know, we all have different, you know, we all have different experiences. That used to happen to me.
He wasn't nice to my parents, and that
of course
ticked
that
me off.
If he wasn't nice to my parents, I would kick his ass.
Yes.
Yeah, which that came later. But anyway, that's a whole other story.
Oh.
I'm actually making a documentary.
You are?
Yeah, Kicking Robert Vaughn's Ass. Yes.
No.
Next on the WB.
He's, you know.
Shelley.
He's aged well.
No, we all have those experiences.
Shelley, we have to touch upon your amazing role in Will and Grace. Because how, as an actress and a talented one, do you come up with that concept for that character? Or was this something that was written and you just simply brought it to life, was written for you, perhaps with you in mind?
No. What happened was, I'll tell it briefly. My husband and I follow the Lakota Sioux traditions. We do the sweat lodges, and we pray in there. It keeps you grounded. It's wonderful. We've been doing this since 1981. And our elder, Bearhart, who has since crossed over, was coming to do a sweat lodge with us, and I said, I'm going to give up acting. I don't like the material. They're giving me to even audition. And he said, with his Oklahoma accent, when you get into the sweat lodge, be very particular as to what you would like to do. So we went into the lodge, and he said, start praying, honey. And I said, I want to be in a show, a comedy show that says something, with really good writing, Fifth Banana, and if at all possible, in front of a live audience. That was Sunday night. Tuesday, my agent faxed me some material and said, you're going in at 4 o'clock to read for the producers. They've read 75 actresses already. So I got the material, and it was like, Walter, come over here. You have to help me learn this. It was like, I connected. Went in to see Max and David. Walked in, dragged a chair over to where they were sitting, and I said, is this going to take long? I have to go home and cook a chicken. That was Tuesday. Got in the car. Agent calls me, and I said, how did it go? He said, you start tomorrow.
Wow.
And it was only supposed to be one show.
Really?
One show. And that was the last show of the first season.
Oh, she wasn't in the... That was the last show of the first season?
The last show of the first season. And so much of the character was my mother.
Uh-huh.
My mother, who was amazing. Amazing. She had no filter.
Uh-huh.
I loved her.
What did you say? Loved kids and animals? And
yes.
What was it? Everyone
was just drawn to her.
Yeah. That's actually fascinating. And that always, to me, is the mark of a great portrayal. When I hear things like that, and I find out, oh, she didn't appear till the last episode of the first season. What does that say? I can't watch Will and Grace without thinking that, you know, I always watch that show, and I don't think of, oh, you know those four people from Will and Grace. I was like, you know those five people from Will and Grace, because it's a machine that worked.
Right.
You know, it was just, you know, every cog. And I also love the little nod that it was back to some of the older shows in terms of the domestic that was smarter than whether it was Marla Gibbs on the Jeffersons, whether it was Rochester with Jack Benny.
Shirley Booth.
Yeah, exactly. Hazel. It's just something that, you know, just love that nod back and the wonderful political incorrectness of that show.
Oh, and the writing was so
yes.
brilliant.
Oh, yeah.
It was.
And
brilliant.
The writers and Jimmy Burrows directed every episode.
He's
yes.
pretty amazing, isn't
yes.
he?
Oh, my God. Oh my! Everyone, and we all had each other's back.
Yeah.
I want to. Wow. We got about 7 minutes left, so I want to do a couple of things. I want to put this information out there again for the upcoming screening of Weaving the Past.
Weaving
that is
the past.
To benefit the Museum of Social Justice, and to find out more about that, it's museumofsocialjustice.org, and of course the film Weaving the Past. The website for that, Weaving the Past. com, and
that comes up May 18th.
Yes, and I want to say Weaving the Past is not the full title. It is Weaving the Past, Journey of Discovery, which really sounds wonderful. I'm very, very excited that we are able to promote that here. And after this, will it now do the, does it do the festival circuit now? And do you submit it? Because I found out something interesting about the festival circuits. Like if you go to to submit to Sundance or something like that, you're kind of limited where you can submit to, because things like Sundance and Tribeca, they only want world premieres.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't like submit right across the board. So you have to do early submission for Sundance or Tribeca and then keep your fingers crossed.
It's kind of like going to college or university.
Exactly.
You have to fill out all these applications, and when the best one comes in, you grab it.
You grab it. Okay.
We want the audience to find this. We don't want to just take this film and shove it in a theater and it'll be gone.
Mm-hmm.
The audience will find it. We're talking to people right now about distributors. We don't want to give it away because we want to earn enough that we can continue on with the second documentary that we're working on. And other than that, I need a new faucet for the kitchen, honey. Please. I swear to God.
Just haven't
I'm
had
not,
the time
I'm
to get the plumber
kidding.
In.
I'm not kidding.
But the the thing about documentaries like short films, especially in the festival format, is that really in the festival format, I hope for one thing, and that is, because I'm working on a short film now, that you just want to be the one that people talk about.
Yes.
You just want to be the one that people talk about. So
yes.
If you could be that, and it sounds with the way that you're describing this, it really sounds like it's the one that people are going to talk about. You know, don't you think?
I think so. Yeah. I think it's fascinating. And you know, we've said it, family. It's right. This is what it's about.
Right.
We need to see these kinds of things. Our kids need to see these kinds of things.
Right.
We need to follow
a journey, whether it's yours. Or
and you'll laugh, you'll cry.
Yeah. Yeah.
There are things in the film that are not fully answered. So people will go home and
leaves
illuminate.
You with something to think about.
Yeah.
Questions are asked.
As it should.
Yeah, definitely.
Right? As it should.
Okay, we got 4 minutes left, Shelley.
Yeah.
We need people to. We always ask people at the end of the show to share. Although you actually shared one with us already, which was hysterical. But
I have
the
another one.
onstage disasters that happens. Oh, I just got a nice juicy look at Mother Love. Do you know that?
Yes, she just walked down the hall.
Mother Love just walked by, and she just gave me an eyeful, or rather, I should say, two eyefuls. But that's another. I tell you,
beautiful eyes.
Mother Love is another host we have, and she just walked behind you, and I got a little show. And it wasn't entire. It was anyway. That's another show.
You're talking to a former nun.
Former nun. I was saying. So give us the tale that you have. You got 3.5 minutes to tell us about a onstage performance mishap that happened.
Well, it wasn't on stage. But it was
or
on
a
set.
Performance.
Yeah.
Okay. There you go.
On the Flying Nun, and on the Flying Nun, we had those very heavy, wide hats that we had to wear that were like 6 pounds.
Right.
And it, you know, it was just hard to get in and out of bathroom stalls and the whole thing. And then we had the surplus, and then we had a belt with the rosary beads with a cross and Jesus on the cross. And one day I just got stuck in the stall, and my cross kept falling in the toilet. And I remember coming out, you know, washing it and coming out and wiping it on my dress. And just when Harry Ackerman, the head of the studio, saw me, he said, "Shelley, what are you doing?" I said, "I fell in the toilet." So the next day they took Jesus off my cross.
Poor guy.
It was, an accidental baptism.
Absolutely. And so they gave him a full bris, you know.
A full body bris, as it were.
As they say.
That's hysterical. Full body bris.
Wow. Walter, what about you now? In your career, I mean, there's got to be things you've run up against.
You know, I just... the only thing I can just think of is just when you're rolling and you've had a very complicated setup and it's very, very... you've got a lot of people and you've got camera moves and you're out on location... And the sun is fading quickly. You really only have time for one or two at the most. And you get it all going and all the background action and everything. And you say, roll it. And then somebody out of the blue walks right through the shot singing a song in their own world, you know, just completely, you know,
yeah,
just ruining the take. And,
right.
Right. Throwing your arms up and screaming.
They
know,
didn't have cutoffs in 1860.
Exactly, exactly. So it's that kind of thing.
Oh,
that,
yeah.
You know, that happens.
Yeah,
but,
every you think you have everything covered, and then you get that one
that
little
one glitch.
That moth flies.
That always happens.
No. What a pleasure it's been having
Absolutely.
Both of you here. We're very, very grateful to have you
Thank
on.
Thank you.
The two of you are adorable.
Oh, sweet of you. That's
oh
very, very
God,
kind.
Let's
Thank
take
you.
Them home.
Let's remind our listeners, Weaving the Past,
yes.
Journey of Discovery is the documentary.
May
See it
18th.
Wherever it appears. And the website, weavingthepast.com, and the upcoming screening that is taking place on May 18th, you said?
Yes.
To benefit Museum of Social Justice. Check them out at museumofsocialjustice.org. This was a fun show, Michael.
And
it
of course,
flew by.
We have to give Stephanie a plug down there at the Laguna Playhouse.
Ah, yes.
In Steel Magnolias. And
yes.
It's just opened, so what better to go see theater by the ocean down there in beautiful Laguna Beach? And that's easy to find. So Laguna Playhouse on the internet. You can find it. Be there or be
oblong.
There you go.
Yes. Okay. Thank you both. Michael, as always, nice sharing the microphone
with
you.
Thank you, Paul. See you on the radio.
See you next week.
You're listening to State of the Art with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.